All right. Good morning, everybody. Today is Thursday, February 25th, 2016. And this is Before the First Cup of Jewels here on UCY.TV. Happy Thursday, everybody. It is 38 degrees and kind of sunny here in upstate New York. Definitely got over that gray rain, snow, slush mix we had yesterday. It's almost looking like spring out there, so I'm pretty excited. Snow is all melting and it's feeling kind of warm. So where do we leave off yesterday? Well, apparently, robots were the talk of the town. You see, you know, I mean, it's great because that's just like my topic du jour. We do robots, oh, I don't know, at least once a week, I'd have to say, for the last couple years. So it's great. But yes, everybody's talking robots. We titled the show Humans versus Robots, Mini Brains, and Dopamine Headphones. What? Yeah, it was a pretty awesome show. There were some great articles. Of course, we have the new Atlas robot. I heard about Atlas ad nauseum on just about every show I tuned into yesterday. But I got to tell you, I watched a few more videos on DARPA's Atlas, and man, is that a scary robot. You know, they even pushed him with a broom handle, and they knocked him over a couple times, and they kicked packages out of the way. And this thing does not give up. I mean, the way you thought that, like, Big Dog was scary running through the woods, and, like, when they kicked over Cheetah, and Cheetah got right back up and must have, like, some sort of internal gyroscope to always know which way is up. And that thing got right back up, and it fell. It skidded on its knees, and it got right back up. Well, this robot is doing exactly the same thing. He used to look like he was pretty top-heavy, but he doesn't anymore. So I would say if you have not seen the new Atlas, go out to Boston Dynamics. PigMineNews.com has them as well. There's some good videos, and just watch that. Send it to your friends and family. And make them pay attention to that. So anyway, humans versus robots. We did a story talking about how robots that look like us are apparently threatening to many people. And I would say to any normal human, if you are not afraid of the coming integration of robotics into our lives, you should be. You know, we've done a lot of stories on the ability of robots to have rights, and whether or not once we've created this life form that has some sort of cognitive abilities that can see, think, feel, potentially, you know, do we need to give them legal rights? Well, now they're questioning the reasons that humans feel disgust for robots when they look more human. And they've determined it's because humans feel uncomfortable not being able to tell the difference between a real human and a fake human, i.e. an android of some kind. And I would absolutely agree with that. But what was even more disturbing about that story is that they are working on all the psychological ways, just like all this other stuff, resistant consumers. They are working on how to use psychology to manipulate us into accepting with open arms this coming merging with the machine. And don't forget, our mobile devices and this Internet of Things is just the next step. You know, I talked about the contact lens that now has internet on it. I saw it was actually supposedly the next generation beyond Google Glass. Actually, we can look at this, I think, in a few minutes. Where I wanted to end up is from where we left off yesterday, though, was these dopamine headphones. Now, the mini brains, all right, the mini brains were beyond disturbing, these little mini ball brains made out of your own skin cells that they're going to use to test drugs and, of course, find a cure for Zika, right? We have all these kids now with brain disorders because of the quote-unquote pandemic epidemic of Zika. But, hey, we're making little mini brains in the lab, and we'll be able to test all kinds of stuff on them and use you as our guinea pigs. But even better, if anyone remembers the DARPA ElectRx program, where they were using sound waves and electrical pulses and things to stimulate the vagus nerve. And we've talked about the vagus nerve. That is that main direct connect between the gut and the brain. And DARPA was messing around with it, doing all kinds of experiments. And they discovered that when they stimulate that nerve, it has some market changes in the brain as far as chemical production and such. We also discovered way before that that our gut flora has a lot to do with our mood, whether or not you're depressed or happy. And they have discovered that that is because your gut flora can directly influence that vagus nerve that directly influences your brain. Well, DARPA, their technology is now rolled out, and I find it very interesting. We only read like the first paragraph of the story yesterday, but as we get down to the bottom here, you're going to see how interesting it is that they say that the company that's putting this out hasn't provided any details about how this works or where the research was done. No, because we know where the research was done. They can't say, oh, this came hot out of DARPA's labs, mind control headphones, but here you go. Dopamine, the drug in the area of the brain that is stimulated, that causes addiction to things and causes addiction to all the wrong things, right? High fructose corn syrup, gambling, sex, cocaine, alcohol. I mean, that is the portion of the brain that can be the center for lots of potential problems. Now, here's something that I was thinking about after we started the story yesterday, is that with Tommy Insel, former director of the National Institute of Mental Health, going over to Google and working on mental health issues. And one of their big things not only is to diagnose mental disorders through voice patterns on your cell phone, smart apps, but one of the other things that they were talking about doing was, I totally forgot. I lost my train of thought. But it's okay. We'll get there. Wait. Oh, curing addiction. That's what it was. Dopamine. Sorry. I looked away for 1 second and that's what happens. They wanted to cure addiction. And they got all kinds of nifty ideas now on how they can get into your brain and zip, zap, zip, give you some new DNA switch flipping drug with nanobots in it. I mean, it's beyond insane. I don't know. Look it up. There's all new research articles on ways to cure. They're going to cure our addictions because addiction has been diagnosed as a mental disorder. Okay. Before we get too off the track, let's focus now. Headphones that get you high on dopamine are tipped to go on sale next month. Now, doesn't anybody out there like look at this and go, wow, that sounds kind of freaky. They're messing with your brain chemicals. And I never heard about research about this. I mean, if you were reading mainstream, you didn't. And who is this company that's coming out with these headphones that are messing with my brain chemicals that, is that safe? Is it legal? Should we be driving? I mean, all good questions. Headphones that stimulate the release of dopamine in your brain and reportedly make you feel high as hell have been invented by Florida-based tech company Nirvana. And, you know, we're going to look into Nirvana and see how much sprinkle whatever they got from DARPA. Nirvana, spelled N-E-R-V-A-N-A, and they are set to go on sale as early as next month. The headphones will pump music into your ears as normal, but at the same time, an integrated device will deliver a low-powered electrical signal, or shock, through your ear canal to stimulate the vagus nerve, which is the nerve that runs from the brainstem to the abdomen and plays a role in the release of dopamine, which is a neurotransmitter that helps control the brain's reward and pleasure center. You know, we absolutely want to get these guys and give them control of the reward and pleasure centers of our brain. This is just beyond frightening. I felt, this is quote now, I felt the electricity go into my arm and everything was tingling there. But the best moment for me was afterwards when I finished and I stood up, said the journalist Amanda Guterman for Futurism, which I guess is a publication. I felt like I reached a personal high point. I couldn't stop smiling or laughing, and I was like, oh, wow, for about 5 minutes. My happiness level was 10 out of 10. Then it got foggier, but I was still unusually happy for about an hour. Now, we've done so many shows digging into dopamine and the way it interacts in your brain and all the things that can cause dopamine addiction. Video games, another one. Some of the research we also saw showed that in the MFRIs of psychopaths seem to have a greater need for dopamine than non-psychopaths. Psychopaths require more dopamine, require more thrills, require more risky behavior, because that section of the brain tends to be a little bit larger. And so the theory is that because psychopaths require more dopamine, and, you know, life in general is kind of boring, that's why they go out and perform all these risky behaviors, is to try and give themselves the pleasure that they need to be happy, because they get bored easy. But even more interestingly, we found another study that was looking at video gamers, and they had discovered that compulsive video gamers, you know, these kids that are on 24/7, that's all they do is glued to their chair playing these games, that it caused that same section of the brain that interacts with dopamine, it caused that section of the brain to get bigger. And it caused these kids to keep needing more and more dopamine. Just like any good drug would, you know, you start to get immune to your last dosage and you're going to need more to get off on it. And here we are turning entire generations of children into at least biological psychopaths by the way their brain chemicals work. And, you know, we've also tied in how these video games back 20 some odd years ago now, Department of Defense skewing up the first-person flyer that I remember in major distribution for computer products and services long before it was like the really early days of e-commerce. Why would the Department of Defense be selling video games? Oh, why would the Department of Defense want all these kids who don't have any emotions, don't have any empathy, who have this need for thrills, who are addicted to dopamine and risky, fast living? It's just such an evil thing. So now let's add to this. So now DARPA, with all their brain research, and of course, dopamine doses cures PTSD, doing all their experimentation on soldiers coming back from war. They also did that live brain implant on National Geographic. I mean, I talk about that all the time, but I mean, all this stuff really happened. And this is just within the last 6 months or so. They did the live brain surgery on National Geographic and implanted a brain chip that would allow them to push a button and release chemicals. Because, hey, dopamine cures Parkinson's disease as well. And that was who this patient that had the brain implant apparently was, a Parkinson's patient. But dopamine, also is that big dangling carrot that they can dangle in front of you. And like the Pied Piper, you're going to be following it all the way off the cliff as a lemming. Don't fall for it. You know what? I bet these headphones are probably the most rockin'est thing you've ever tried. And I was reading this, and I was like, wow, that sounds really cool. But do you know, I'm going to tell you, it's like cigarettes, it's like cocaine, it's like good sex, guys. It's like delicious greasy steaks with sautéed mushrooms and baked potatoes heaped with cheddar cheese, butter, and pepper. It's amazingly delicious. And if you could eat 10 of them, you would. It's not good for you, but you might if you were hungry enough and they were all there. It is the poison apple. They are feeding us the poison apple. And so now they're going to roll out these dopamine headphones to like middle America. Guys, this literally, if we haven't been addicted already, because we have, remember, attention span of a goldfish of 9 seconds because of our smart devices. This is going to take it the next step. And who knows what they can do between tones. I mean, we also read about DARPA figuring out different frequencies and things to be able to push buttons in the brain. This is combining electrical stimulation, deep brain stimulation project, the vagus nerve, which is related to all your gut flora as well. And the vagus nerve, by the way, connects to all your major organs on its way from the abdomen and the gut to the brain. So they have full bodily control. It's just, I don't even know what to say. So let's figure this out, though. So you're going to get this mega intoxication. So is it legal? Can you drive? Well, according to Nirvana, the headphones don't just deliver these electrical signals indiscriminately. Yeah. The technology analyzes the audio signal coming out of your music player and then syncs up the signals to the beats. How long is it going to be before they have some sort of partnership with one of the online streaming music services where then they could like literally program certain types of people to do certain types of things based on certain types of music that they listen to? And this is reaching a whole new realm of insanity. I still haven't fully comprehended the ramifications of this in the future, but I mean, we've read enough about deep brain stimulation and DARPA and electrical impulses in the vagus nerve to know that this is really bad. This is basically giving them access to all of your major systems within your body just by putting on a pair of headphones. And like I've said so many times before, don't let any of this shit get near your eyes, your brain, your ears, your mouth, or your gut, or your nose. You know, there's a couple routes to get into your body that allow an easy hijacking of your bodily systems. One is intranasally. One is through the gut, and another is through the eyes, another is through the ears, through the vagus nerve. It says, if you select ambient mode, the signals will sync up with the sounds in your environment, which means that you can go to a concert and sit up in the back and get high to music legally. Now, you know, digging into dopamine, music actually does produce dopamine without electrical shocks in your ear. You know, music through the different frequencies of notes stimulates different responses within the brain. And you know, you can listen to music and there's some music that makes you feel just amazingly great. And then there's some music that just you're like, blah. It has to resonate with you. But when you find that resonant frequency, like there are certain types of music I like anything that's got minor, dark, gloomy, dystopian music. That's always, since in the 80s, I was into stuff like that. And I still am into stuff like that. You know, there's just a certain sound that when I hear it, I can just close my eyes and I am somewhere else. That must be my resonant frequency. Just like the glass that shatters when you hit that note, beep. You know, I think that there's something very, very similar to that that happens in the human body. And as a matter of fact, I just found a story the other day. Maybe we'll, I don't know, we're going to run out of time here if I keep yabbering. But there was a story, too, about scientists have now discovered that they think smell is done by vibration, which would make a lot of sense. I think everything is done by vibration and waves. All right. Anyway, back to this. So you can sit back at the concert and get high to the music legally. So now it must be said that the claims surrounding these headphones have not been peer-reviewed, and the company has not published any background research that went into its development. Ding, 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 ding. Type in DARPA and look at ElectRx. And you'll find the background research. It's very interesting that they even point that out. They're like, well, we don't know where this research came from. We don't even know if it works. So I can tell you it does work. I can tell you that because people are so dumb, they're going to run out and buy these. It's going to be a quick fix, cheap high while listening to music. And this is going to be the new hot thing. We should buy stock in this Nirvana. It's going to be the new hot thing for teenagers. Better than ecstasy. Better than whatever the new heroin. Whatever the new drugs are on the street that the kids these days are doing. This is going to be like the 21st century. Green, clean, white high. Look, kids. There's no ill effects and you don't overdose on this stuff. You don't end up in the hospital. Or with an adrenaline shot to the heart. If you overdose, you know, I see it happening. I see this as the sit in the chair. I mean, I'm sure that we've seen many futuristic science fiction films. I'm trying to remember which one that was. I mean, Woody Allen and the Orgasmatron, I was thinking, but no, they didn't have music in the Orgasmatron that I remember. But I do remember a movie where some chick sat in this weird bubble white chair with the headphones in it. And that was kind of like this deep induction chamber that they use sounds, lights, and music. Same crap that DARPA's playing with. It all affects your brain. They're all wavelengths, all at different frequencies. And just like the old school phone system that used to be able to do the touchtone, boop, 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 boop. And it then worked on the SS7 network that allowed them to translate that into where they were routing the calls, your brain works very similarly. Well, I mean, at a basic level. Don't quote me on that. Your brain does not work very similarly to a phone system. But like I said, in the basic concepts. All right, anyway. So these haven't been peer-reviewed. The company has not published any type of background research that went into its development, so who knows where it came from? Maybe the aliens sent it. That was a joke. So as to whether or not these things truly deliver on what they promise, we cannot be sure. But if the technology is legit, it sounds like a pretty good way to while away a Sunday afternoon and not pay attention to the news and let them chuck all the fixtures out the back door as they're driving away the armored truck, and you're still sleeping on a Sunday afternoon. What an amazing distraction. And if anyone ever saw that Snoop Dogg conspiracy theory video from a few years ago, I know I've played it on the show quite a ways back, but him talking about, I think it was Janet Jackson, and Janet Jackson putting that thing in her ear when she's on stage. And he says, I'm not putting that shit in my ear because they could, like, blow up a homie's head. And because he was told that. Well, you know what? I totally believe it. I mean, even with just an earpiece, I totally believe it. But now, I mean, they literally could blow up a homie's head chemically. You know, I mean, we should really start digging into what happens with dopamine overdoses and things of that nature. I wonder if it could send you into some sort of psychosis. Because I would think so. I wonder if it would cause an imbalance of other brain chemicals. I wonder if it could make you violent. Because I would almost think that, you know, it probably gets rid of, helps you get rid of fear by working with the other chemicals such as adrenaline. And you have oxytocin. I mean, I don't know. They could stimulate like the love chemicals to go along with that dopamine. There's some really scary thoughts going on here. All right. Anyway, so it sounds like a pretty good way to completely waste away your Sunday afternoon and keep not paying attention to what really is going on in the world. And as John Levine reports for Mike Magazine, the headphones will set you back $299, just a mere $299 for a forever high. And are expected to go on sale next month. Now, remember, I also talked about price point. Price point's important when you're trying to get a technology such as this on the market and into the hands of a lot of people. $299 actually is kind of expensive. I'm going to predict by Christmas they'll be down to $199. But, you know, once computers hit sub $1,000 PCs, that's when computers started to show up in the consumer section of the Sunday sale papers, and everybody had a chicken in every pot and a computer on every desk. Same with the home robots. As soon as the price starts dropping, guys, that's why Jibo was so scary, because Jibo was going to be at that price point. I don't remember what his price was, but he was under a few hundred bucks. And I hope Jibo has gone to the land of the no longer living robots. As John Levine reports in Mike Magazine, the headphones will set you back $299 and are expected to go on sale next month. And if you are interested in using them on the go, you'd better be prepared to cart around a chunky generator. It's basically like carrying one iPhone for your music and another one for your electrical signals. But whatever you do, don't listen and drive. So here we go. We are not going to recommend driving, certainly not while using it. Now, how many stupid people are going to drive with these things on? Because I bet you they will, says Nirvana co-founder and CEO Amy Brannon, adding that while she was confident that there was no impairment to brain function, or you'd hope not, the official advice is to stay off the road for at least 30 minutes after use. So if someone wants to volunteer to be the guinea pig and fork out a few hundred dollars to see if they actually work, that would be great, because they sure sound like a whole lot of fun. And that was out of sciencealert.com. So how wonderful is that? This is a really bad place to be going. And the naive, ignorant public that don't, you know, we're all tinfoil hat wearing lunatics, start talking about something hard like brain chemicals, and they shut down. Yeah, they're going to start using this as treatments for depression next. You wait and see. We're going to prescribe you some of these dopamine headphones, and your insurance, your Obamacare is going to cover it. Put these on 3 times a day. Make sure you get your dose. And call me next week. All right, we're going to continue on brains. A mammal's brain has been cryogenically frozen and recovered for the first time. For the first time ever, researchers have cryogenically frozen a whole mammalian brain and recovered it in near-perfect condition with the cell membranes, synapses, and intracellular structures all intact. Again, Woody Allen sleeper. What this means, you know, honestly, that dopamine, those dopamine headphones might be the future of Gasmatron, people. Put those on and get yourself a new robotic sex doll, and you're going to be all set. Oh my God. I just had like a horrifying flash about that. They could do that too. All right, back to this. Cryogenically frozen brains. What this means is that all the components we think are required to form personal identity, including your memory and your personality, could be potentially preserved for a long period of time before either being uploaded to a computer, ding, 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 for perpetuity, so being sucked into the machine forever and ever, or for reanimating, yes, reanimating, sometime in the future. Yes, it's what Walt Disney always dreamed of doing and actually never attempted, but I think he is still frozen somewhere. And what Austin Powers mastered with spectacular awkwardness. This is a big deal, says John Smart, co-founder of the nonprofit Brain Preservation Foundation. It is the first time that we have a procedure that can protect everything neuroscientists think is involved with learning and memory. And given the results announced today, it seems to me that long-term memories are successfully preserved by this technique. This is not yet certain or universally agreed, but it seems highly likely from my position. The Brain Preservation Foundation awarded its 5-year-old Small Mammal Brain Preservation Prize to 21st Century Medicine. Ha! Ding, ding, ding! An independent research group led by an MIT graduate, Robert McIntyre. How interesting they called it 21st Century Medicine. And that is like the buzzword for all stops out. Don't test anything. Line up to be a guinea pig, 21st Century Medicine. Coming from the lizard pit of MIT. They awarded Robert McIntyre the Small Mammal Brain Preservation Prize for coming up with the best technique to bring a frozen mammal's, in this case a rabbit's, brain back to life. The researchers have pocketed $26,735 for their efforts, and here is how they did it. The team dispersed a chemical compound called glutaraldehyde into the internal structures of a rabbit's brain at the same time to stabilize it and to prevent decay. Then, as it was undergoing cooling, they slowly added a cryoprotectant liquid to ensure that the connectome, and we've talked about the brain's connectome, there's a massive connectome project going on as part of the brain project, ensuring that the connectome, which is the complex map of connections that keep the 86 billion neurons or so humming along, and synaptic structures were not damaged in the process. This internal damage has been the number one reason why cryopreservation of the brain has failed so consistently in the past. The whole thing was converted into a near glass-like structure by cooling it to minus 130 degrees Celsius, which is minus 210 degrees Fahrenheit, for over 4 hours, which prepared it for some serious long-term storage. And when the team wanted to thaw it out, they just had to gently reheat the brain and flush out the cryoprotectant chemicals. The glutaraldehyde bought us weeks, and the cryoprotectant bought us centuries, says McIntyre to Gizmodo. That's a magazine that I read a lot. Judges assigned by the Brain Preservation Foundation. Did you know we had one of those? Judges assigned by the Brain Preservation Foundation were then tasked with figuring out exactly how the intact brain remained throughout the procedure using electron microscopy imaging to make before and after comparisons of the delicate structures. Every neuron and synapse looked beautifully preserved across the entire brain, says Foundation President and Judge Kenneth Haywood. Simply amazing, he said, given that I held in my hand this very same brain when it was frozen solid. This new technique, called aldehyde-stabilized cryopreservation, has been published in the Journal of Cryobiology. And according to Claire Maldarelli of Popular Science, the technique was originally proposed in a 1986 book, oh my God, called Engines of Creation by our good old friend, ding, 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 Eric Drexler, oh my, who of course is the father of nanotechnology out of MIT, but also apparently Eric Drexler buddies with Kurzweil, also talked about cryogenically freezing brains using this actual technique. But it wasn't tested until 2010 when Greg Fahey, the chief scientific officer of 21st Century Medicine, used it to preserve some kidneys. Now that Fahey's team has managed to successfully apply it to a rabbit's brain, they're going to work on making it work for something bigger. Next up, a pig's brain. And you know, they're doing this out of MIT. Didn't we just read about the human pig hybrids that they were growing at MIT for organ transplantation? Pretty sure that's where that Chimera lab was. So yeah, they're using a pig's brain, but who knows how many human cells are going to be in there. So where does this leave all of us? Well, good question. Well, what the 21st Century Medicine team are trying to perfect now is a synthetic revival, a modern form of cryopreservation that's focused on preserving the structure of the brain so it can be uploaded to a computer or to a robot body in the future, rather than preserving the actual biological components to be transplanted into another body. And yeah, it did say that, uploading it to a robot in the future. Told you that's part of the 2045 plan, and there are phases that it's going to go through. And one is going to be to actually put a brain into a robotic body, but the next is going to be able to upload yourself. George Dvorsky explains to Gizmodo, quote, the revived digital brain, also known as a whole brain emulation, could be uploaded into a computer simulation or to a robotic body. But because the system involves deconstructive scanning, the biological components of the original brain would be destroyed by the toxic chemical bath during the preservation process. Following preservation and stabilization, these brains would be cut into extremely fine slices and then individually scanned. And together, the collection of digitized brain slices would then represent an uninstantiated individual. Well, that's all well and good, but there is more to a person. But is there more to a person or an animal's being than the incredibly complex map of synapses and neurons firing electrical signals to each other? Well, it's almost impossible to know without actually trying it, so step right up. And I don't have to tell you how ethically ambiguous it is, but figuring out exactly what goes into a brain, biologically speaking, to create the thoughts and feelings of a living thing is something scientists are determined to figure out. And, you know, it's the one thing. It's the one thing that they haven't quite gotten yet. They can build all these body parts now, 3D print them, made them out of stem cells, right off your own hand, make a liver and a brain. But remember, even with those mini brains, they can think, but they had no input yet. they didn't really know how to make them learn or anything because they still don't fully understand. And that's why this Global Brain Project is going to be, as Obama said, between the Brain Project and the 21st century medicine, what fuels our future economy, just like the Genome Project did for the last century. Quote, as to knowing what these techniques capture, the rest of the person, including personality and consciousness, we will get there, but just more slowly, Smart told Motherboard. Consciousness is still not definitively understood in neuroscience, though neuroscientists are beginning to offer promising materialist models. We are off, obviously a very long way from applying any of this to humans. But excuse me while I daydream, not me, about waking up in a robot suit in 100 years' time to find out why we still haven't figured out hoverboards. Ha, ha, ha. Do, do, do. Guys, they really are working on this. This is not a joke. And I know we've pointed and laughed at transhumanists for a long time, but, you know, and they're saying, oh, 100 years from now. Well, that isn't the plan. 100 years, 2045 is the plan. Even Kurzweil thinks we're going to make it, and with exponential laws of returns, we might even make it sooner than there, then. All right, there were three stories that came out about uploading brains. Here's another one. In a future brave new world, will it be possible to live forever? Now, remember, all the tech billionaires are putting bazillions of dollars into the longevity projects, and they're trying to cure death as a disease. January is the month, and this was from last month, January 18, 2016. January is a month for renewal and for change, and many of us have been gifted shiny new fitness trackers. Yes, your Fitbit, Internet of Things attachment. Treated ourselves to some new gadget or other, or upgraded to the latest smartphone, all dopamine-producing tools. And as we huff and puff our way out of the season of excess, we find ourselves wishing we could trade in our overindulged bodies for the latest model. Now, guys, when you start looking at also these virtual reality goggles and how this VR stuff, we saw Facebook now is jumping onto the VR bandwagon. We got all these different industries between football and NASCAR and boxing matches that are all going to be jumping on board concerts. So you can get a front row seat. It's going to blend the lines between reality and fantasy. Whether you're here or there, doesn't matter. You are going to be in the Matrix. And I talked about this a long time ago. I mean, obviously you're going to get bed sores if you're sitting around 24/7 in a chair plugged in or with goggles on. And goggles are just the next step. Then come the brain implants or the dopamine headphones. But what's going to happen next? Your body is going to become useless while you're living in your mind. Well, hey, that's why this is so huge. Because you know what? It won't matter about your body anymore. We'll be able to just upload you and download you into a new avatar. And you can look or feel however you wish in the future. They're priming society for this technology. The reality is that even with the best of care, the human body eventually ceases to function. But if I can upgrade my smartphone, why can't I upgrade myself? There you go, guys. Augmented cognition, too. You remember, you know, the smartphone was one. Google Glass was next. And then, you know, we're going to be able to put these headphones on. And yeah, it's going to be great. And people just keep wanting more and more and more of the dangling carrot. The next will be put in the implant. Do the body mods. What did we find out that was called? Body hacking. People sticking magic. What did Regina Duggan call them? Your superpower chip under your skin. So you can just wave it at a door and it opens miraculously. Or you could buy things by the wave of your hands. using technology, it is not possible. Is it not possible to live forever, they ask. Well, after all, humans have been upgrading themselves in various ways for centuries. So, of course, this is just normal. The invention of writing allowed us to offload our memories. Suits of armor made the body invincible to spears, and eyeglasses gave us perfect 20/20 vision. And this is something that designer and author Natasha Vita Moore has been thinking about for a long time, where she, in 1983, wrote the Transhumanist Manifesto, setting out her vision for a future where technology can lead to radical life extension, if not living forever, then living for a lot longer than currently possible. Vita Moore has also designed a prototype whole-body prosthetic that she calls the Primo Posthuman. This is a hypothetical artificial body that could replace our own and into which we could, in theory, upload our consciousness. This is more in the realm of living forever. This is more in the realm of living forever, but it is a concept as distant to us as Leonardo da Vinci's sketch of a flying machine was to 15th century Europeans. But even so, while the replacement body seems much closer to science fiction than science, recent advances in robotics and prosthetics have not only given us artificial arms that can detect pressure and temperature, but limbs that can be controlled by thoughts using a brain-computer interface. And we've looked at all this stuff. Of course, it was all in the name of the brain-damaged explosion, damaged vets that they sent into war, got hurt, came back, and they had to fix them. It's a captive audience. We got brain-controlled limbs now. Look at how cool this is. But we also got our guinea pigs out of it all. As a transhumanist, Vita Moore is excited by these scientific developments. She defines a transhumanist to be, quote, a person who wants to engage with technology, extend the human lifespan, intervene with the disease of aging. See, the disease of aging. And wants to look critically at all of these things. Transhumanism, she explains, looks at not just augmenting or bypassing the frailties of the human body, but also at improving intelligence, eradicating diseases and disabilities, and even equipping us with greater empathy. Yeah, I don't think that's going to happen. Equipping us with greater empathy? As you're destroying the biology of the planet? That gives you empathy. It's all a lie, people. This is all a lie. I mean, this is for real. Don't get sucked in by the poison apple. The goal is to stay alive as long as possible, as healthy as possible, with greater consciousness or humanness. No one wants to stay alive drooling in a wheelchair, she says. Well, this is not going to increase your humanness. Who wouldn't want to be smarter, stronger, healthier, kinder? What could possibly go wrong? Well, remember, as you start giving them the ability to augment you, they now have control over every system in your body. That's what frightens me about those dopamine headphones and accessing the vagus nerve. You know, it connects to every organ, all your major organs, all the way up, and they can be manipulated by that nerve. Well, what could possibly go wrong? Well, a lot, says Dr. Fiantra Obachian, a Marie Curie Assisted Research Fellow at the Institute of Ethics at Dublin City University, whose research involves the ethics of technology. Take, for example, being taller than average. This correlates with above average income, so it is a desirable trait. But if medical technology allowed for patients to choose a taller than average child, we've talked about this as well. They just gave the green light to genetic modification of human embryos in the UK. You know, of course they can only live for 7 days, and of course it's only for research. But remember, China's already done it. China's got clone factories ready to roll. It's not going to be too long before people with cash especially can have their own custom-developed hacked embryo that can be born into a child. But if medical technology allowed for parents to choose a taller than average child, then this could lead to a height race where each generation becomes taller and taller, he explained. Similarly, depending on the society, even a non-homophobic people might select against having gay children, assuming that this were possible, if they thought that it would be a disadvantage. And we might find ourselves inaugurating an era of liberal eugenics, which is what we've talked about before. That's where this is all leading, is to eugenics, making us gods to decide who's worthy to live and who isn't. And what traits are worthy to be born and what aren't? Liberal eugenics, in which future generations are created according to consumer choice. Then, of course, there is the problem of affordability. Most of us do not have the financial means to acquire the latest cutting-edge tech until the price drops and it becomes mainstream. Imagine a future where only the rich could access human enhancements, live long lives, and avoid health problems. And that's exactly where this technology is going. Elysium, starring Matt Damon, takes this idea to the most extreme, leading to the scenario similar to what Obrachin describes as, quote, an unbridgeable divide between the enhanced and the unenhanced. And despite the hyper focus on these technological advancements that come with the risk and ethical dilemmas, the transhumanist movement also seems to be about kicking back against, or at least questioning, what society expects of you. There are certain parameters of what is normal or natural, and there's certain parameters of what one is supposed to be. You're supposed to go to school at a certain age, get married at a certain age, produce children, retire, and grow old. You're supposed to live until you are 80, be happy, die, and make way for the young. Vida Moore sees technology as freeing us from these societal and biological constraints. Why can't we choose who we are beyond the body where we were born with? Scholars on sociology of the early web showed that cyberspace became a place for this precise form of expression. And maybe technology will continue to provide a platform for this reinvention of what is to be human. And maybe where we're going, we just won't need bodies. Nell Watson's job is to think about the future. And she says, I often wonder if, since we could be digitized from the inside out, not in the next 10 years, but sometime in this century, we could create a kind of digital heaven or playground where our minds will be uploaded and we could live with our friends and family away from the perils of the physical world. Who's to say that that doesn't happen already? Who's to say that that doesn't happen on some dimensional level somewhere that we just don't quite understand yet? Because remember, we are still puny humans. And by uploading yourself to some human creation, you now are literally trapping yourself into a hell on earth. I mean, think about that for a second. It really wouldn't matter if our bodies suddenly stopped functioning. It wouldn't be the end of the world if we were uploaded digitally. What really matters is that we could still live on. In other words, you could simply be uploaded to a new, perhaps synthetic body. And as a futurist with Singularity University, and that's, of course, Kurzweil's creepy group, a Silicon Valley-based corporation that's part university, part business incubator, Nell Watson, in her own words, is someone who looks at the world today and projects into the future, who tries to figure out what current trends mean in terms of the future of technology, society, and how these things intermingle. She talks about existing technologies that are already changing our bodies and our minds. There are experiments using DNA origami, and yeah, at MIT, guys, that's where they discovered this origami thing, and these DNA origami robots are self-replicating. It's a new technique that came out a few years ago and uses the natural folding abilities of DNA to create little Lego blocks out of DNA on tiny, tiny scales. And then you can create logic gates, which are the basic four computers out of these things. And yeah, then put them into people. These are being used experimentally today to create nanobots. And yeah, these are the little DNA nanobots that can go inside the bloodstream and destroy leukemia cells. And in trials, they have already cured two people of leukemia. This is not science fiction. It is fact. And we read about one of those stories, actually. Nanobots are also able to carry out distributed computing, i.e. communicating with each other inside of living things. She says, explaining that this has been done successfully with cockroaches. And we talked about that one, too. The cockroach is essentially an onboard computer. And if you scale this up to humans and optimize it, there's no reason why we cannot have our smartphones inside of our bodies. There you go, people. And carry them around. This onboard AI traveling around in our bloodstream would act as our co-pilot, seeing what you see, experiencing what you experience, and recording everything, and maybe even making a map of every single neuron in your brain while it's at it. And with a digitized copy of your brain, whatever you is could, in theory, be uploaded to the cloud. Does this mean that we could ever be disconnected from the web ever, ever again? And what if your internal smartphone is hacked? Could your thoughts be monitored? Well, that's a damn good question. I'm telling you guys, everything we've talked about is now being culminated in this nightmare. Humans have become so dependent now because of the dopamine on our smartphones and so used to sharing data with third parties that this co-pilot inside of us might be all too readily accepted without deeper consideration. And they open their arms, and I'm telling you, the American public will accept it readily. All right, guys, make sure you stick around. It's Thursday. Mr. Kevin Blanch is up live next, and it's 7 Game On with Ron Stevens at 8 p.m. Eastern, Behind the Woodshed with Hal Anthony. This week's show at 10 p.m. Double Cross Radio with Chuck, and at 11, the Anti-Media Radio with Mr. S.M. Gibson. All right, guys, make sure you stick around, and I will catch up with you tomorrow. Everyone, take care.